Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and Manhattan. You are listening to BashaniRadio.com. New York City, always talking about everything.
It's never been easier to start your very own radio show on Bashani Radio. Your Bashani Radio show will give you up to an hour show per week with access to over 500,000 monthly listeners. Plus, streamed to millions more on iHeartRadio, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, and TuneIn Radio. Run your own advertisements and keep 100% of the revenue. Sign up now on BashaniRadio.com and let us set everything up for you with no setup fees. BashaniRadio.com.
Some people move on, but not us.
Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and Manhattan. You are listening to BashaniRadio.com. New York City, always talking about everything.
It's the Benny Randall Show. It's the Benny Randall Show. It's the Benny Randall Show. It's the Benny Randall Show.
Welcome to another edition of the Benny Randall Show. I'm your host, Benny Randall Jr., a.k.a. The Motivator. And this powerful show brings you conversations with today's stars and tomorrow's legends. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride. Come on.
It's the Benny Randall Show. 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 It's the Benny Randall Show.
I love the Benny Randall. I love the Benny Randall. I love the Benny Randall Show. Yeah. I love the Benny Randall. I love the Benny Randall. I love the Benny Randall Show. Yeah.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another edition of the Benny Randall Show. I'm your host, Benny Randall Jr., a.k.a. The Motivator, and you can learn more about me at BennyRandall.com, or you can go to our private community at BennyOnDemand.com. That's Benny with an I-E, B-E-N-N-I-E, OnDemand.com. Like always, we try to bring you important entrepreneurs, important topics, and things that affect not only your life and your world, but the world we live in. And today is another one of those powerful shows. Today's guest is Mr. Carl Jung. He is the founder of Increasing Life Chances for You. Increasing Life Chances for You receive a much more focused, resilient, and confident you. A further enhanced and refined representation of your inner and outer self, an assured and outward presence that garners respect, and an unlimited future filled with confidence, discovery, and fulfillment, thus giving you the confidence vital to becoming successful in your personal and professional life. You deserve a mental health counselor, life coach that understands and is qualified to deliver the opportunity to increase your life chances. Mr. Carl Jung, thank you for being on the Benny Randall Show. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing just great, brother. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to share your audience with you, sir.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mr. Carl Jung is an expert when it comes to this mental health counseling. And in the times we live in right now, ladies and gentlemen, there is so much mental illness going on in the land and the world around us. Extremely, and even more so in our community, being the African-American community, where a lot of times there's not a lot of resources that are given to a lot of other communities. And therefore, a lot of these issues go unhelped, you know, unanswered. So I wanted to have a conversation with Mr. Carl and talk about this issues and how important it is. And most importantly, what we want to get away from this conversation is solutions. So explain to me, how did you become passionate about mental health, Carl?
That's a great question, Brother Randall. I became passionate about mental health because I've lived it as a parent. I got into this field inadvertently. I had a child that was struggling with what I learned were mental health concerns, and I was not prepared in any way, shape, or form to effectively support and effectively advocate for her during the onset of her initial mental health struggles. And during the 7.5 years in which she was struggling to survive dealing with the system, I got educated. I figured out I had to learn how I could better support my child, how I can better advocate for my family, and how I could support her during this process. And it was a very, very, very life-changing experience.
Very, very powerful.
And when we were initially going through this process, there wasn't a focus on mental health therapy, Brother Randall. They were quick to medicate a child at age 11 with serious psychotropic drugs.
Wow. Therefore making the problem worse, correct? Not actually solving the problem.
Therefore exacerbating a lot of the issues, yet not doing the most important thing. And that was learning what got to this point. How did this child manifest mental health related concerns? Mental health doesn't happen in a vacuum. There's a genesis behind it all. You know? And no one took the time back then to understand, well, what was this child's life like before she started self-harm?
No one
asked that question.
Let me interject there, Mr. Carl. Let me interject there. So are you saying that when it comes to mental health and trying to create an analysis of what someone may be going through, because I'm sure there is no one shoe that fits all, it's important to find out where they came from? Is that what you're saying?
It's important to develop a relationship so that you have some background.
Okay.
If you're going into the doctor to get treated for an infection, you're expecting that they're going to want to know how you got it. Right?
Absolutely.
What were you doing? Where were you? What act did you engage in that caused this infection to happen so that they could be what? Preventative.
Right.
In preventing further infection, right?
The background, yes.
And so that same analogy, in my opinion, should apply to working with mental health. You know, my daughter wasn't born with mental health-related concerns. She didn't have mental health-related concerns the first 7.5 years of her life. So what happened? What was an incident, whether it was known or unknown, within her that changed? That wasn't a focus. It was automatically, we're going to place a diagnosis and we're going to give it X, Y, Z with the expectation that it'll do something.
Okay, let me ask you something there, right, Mr. Carl. Without getting into her own personal problems, I don't know how far you want to go there, but what I want to ask you this, what did you personally find out in your own analysis, you know, how someone gets there in general, how do they get there?
What I found out I'm sorry for cutting you off, brother. What I found out was my daughter, and I don't mind sharing this story because I believe it's important. My daughter was taking things upon herself because she was struggling with issues that were external to her, which involved her parents, her mother, and myself being young and immature and not really understanding what we were doing in totality that could be impacting our daughter's life.
Wow.
And instead of, if you can imagine, a 7.5, 8-year-old trying to communicate that kind of pain, that kind of confusion, that kind of frustration, she didn't know how. And of course she's going to be cognizant. Your child, they're always cognizant of their parents. They don't want to hurt mom. They don't want to hurt dad. So they don't say anything at all. They hold on to it.
Wow.
They keep it inside. But when they do that, the longer that happens, Brother Randall, it's going to become toxic. It's going to manifest itself somehow.
Right. In other words, you will start to, you will implode if you don't explode.
Exactly. You're going to see little signs. There are red flags there, whether it could be something that your child expressed in an art picture at school. It could be something that was said in passing. Things that, you know, parents, we're so busy living, we're not always paying attention to these little things. And those little things were happening, but we didn't understand really what it was. But as she got older, and started to grow into a young preteen. She's changing physiologically. She's changing emotionally. She's growing. All of that angst, all of that confusion, all of that, those feelings are going to start to come out because now my emotional content is changing and I'm changing emotionally. I got to do something with it now. And my child chose to start with self-harm and cutting.
Wow.
Now, imagine it being 1999, 2002, 2003, 2004, somewhere around there. You don't really know. I didn't even know what cutting was.
And for my listeners that are listening around the world and globally.
And for the listeners what
does cutting mean?
Cutting is a form of self-harm where your child might take an object and they would scratch it across themselves. They will nick themselves. They will make scratches on their arms, their thighs, or wherever it might not necessarily be seen by mom and dad.
Deliberately trying to injure themselves.
And they do this as a relief. They're trying to feel something. They're trying to get something out.
Wow.
That they can't verbally express. Okay? So, but guess what? It doesn't just stop there. The longer it happens, it's going to escalate. And if you're not in a position where you can be proactive in your approach in addressing these things, you're going to be in a reactive situation soon where you're going to have to react to something that happened and you're not going to see it coming.
Very, very powerful.
I lived 7.5 years with that. And I couldn't fix it. Brother Randall, and do you know, as a parent, that's the hardest thing to feel.
Absolutely.
That you are helpless to help your child. There's nothing you can do because we're programmed to want to fix stuff, right? Mom and dad, we're programmed to protect. We're programmed to make sure our children are struggling. We're programmed to provide. If they're going through something, we're programmed to fix it. But with mental health, I learned that I can't fix it.
And it
took the wind out of my sails, Brother Randall, to hear my child tell me that, Dad, I don't need you to fix it. I just need you to be there for me. I'm going to fix it. I'm going to do what's necessary for me to have the life that I want to have. I just need to know that you are there to support me while I do this.
Wow. That's very, very deep. Just in case you're joining us, give me a second, Carl. Just in case you're joining us, you're listening to The Benny Randall Show. I'm your host, Benny Randall Jr., a.k.a. The Motivator, right here on Bashani Radio. We're speaking to Mr. Carl Young. He's a mental health expert, and he's here today to give us some solutions and some answers to a lot of the mental health problems that are going on. In case you've missed any part of this, you can always rewind, and it's always 24/7 on demand worldwide on iHeart, Spotify, iTunes, and wherever you can get podcasts or whatever it is available.
Don't stop. Keep it locked. Keep it we locked. Global, baby. BashaniRadio.com. You better ask somebody. Kaboom.
That is so awesome.
Hey, everybody, Rachel Ray here. Nothing brings a bigger smile to my face than cooking up a big meal for the whole family and lots of friends. But there's not enough room at my table for the 17 million kids in our country who struggle with hunger. That's why the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks collects surplus food to give hope to hungry kids. But they can't do it without your help. Support Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org.
A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and Manhattan. You are listening to BashaniRadio.com. New York City, always talking about everything.
I really appreciate you sharing this story, Carl, because I think it's an important topic. And honestly, I think it does not get a lot of attention like it should say. So here's where I want to go with this conversation. What are some of the signs that somebody give off that something may be wrong for those parents, loved ones, or whatever that may be going through a mental health situation? What are some of the signs? If I ask you for three signs, what are some of the signs that people who need some help give off?
First, I would say the number one sign is disengagement. I would say you right now, and the reason I say disengagement is because there's a disconnect happening right now with this generation of young people and their parents. Communication is not happening. Children are going to other resources to engage and communicate. They're using social media now. They're sharing more of their lives with their friends than their mothers and fathers. When you start to see those kinds of things happening, as parents, we can't afford now to not be in the mix, Brother Randall, with our children. We need to know. There's no such thing as being overly vigilant when it comes to the relationship with your child. We need to get back to being able to have conversations and providing environments for our children to want to come and share their lives with us.
Very, very. Love
okay.
that.
Okay.
Number two.
When you start, so number two, I would say when you see a child that's isolating themselves from family engagement, from their peers, the child that wants to just go home and stay all day in the room with the door closed. A lot of times, a lot of families have just accepted that as just being normal.
Wow.
You know, especially now that we've equipped our kids with iPads and cell phones, they have computers. Well, you know, it's normal they're in the door, they're in their room with the door closed now. That's not normal.
Absolutely, and I totally agree with that, Brother Carl, and tell you why. What I do with my kids, I always make sure I engage them. You know what I mean? I have like, you know, I call it man time and I call it daddy and daughter time. And I give them each individual time so that they can have a conversation if something's bothering with them, because sometimes they don't even want to speak in front of nobody. And I make sure that I give them that one-on-one time. So I definitely know what you mean. And when it's time to eat and whatever, you know, we're at the table. There should be no phones or anything like that going on, because we need to be able to communicate.
The opportunity to communicate can be such a powerful force in being proactive in this approach to addressing mental health.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the reasons why we're struggling in our community right now with this issue.
Absolutely.
We are not communicating. We are not sharing how we are feeling inside. And we are stressed every day, Brother Randall. I don't care how much money you have. I don't care what you do for a living. You can be a lawyer. You can be a doctor. You can be a professional athlete. You can be an entertainer. Our culture comes with stress.
Mm-hmm.
Comes with hypertension. It's genetically in our DNA. And we don't do anything with it, and it festers. We have to navigate these minefields every day. And it is hard work, and it takes an emotional toll. And we're not communicating. When I was going through these things with my daughter, Brother Randall, get back to the story and why it's so important, I was not communicating with anyone, not even my own family, that I was struggling with something, that my daughter was struggling with something. I kept it all in. And guess what? They put me in the hospital.
So let me ask you, I just want to interject there, Mr. Carl.
Yeah.
You kept it all in because you felt like you had to be the hero to solve this problem, and you didn't feel like no one could help you.
Yeah. Who's going to help me? This is my child. I'm responsible for this. I got to be the one.
Wow.
That solves this issue. I can't put it on somebody else. I was doing the exact same thing that my daughter was doing. She was repressing how she was feeling. I was doing the exact same thing. So where do you think she learned that from?
Boom. I was just about to say that. So what was your realization that, okay, this process, the way that I'm attacking this issue, is not the correct one?
I ended up in the emergency room.
Wow.
A stroke waiting to happen. At 38 years old. That's how I came to that realization.
Wow.
My blood pressure was through the roof.
Wow. So tell
all of that. Years.
So tell me how you got here. Tell me how you got here, because this is what I want to make sure.
When I got here, once I realized that I needed to make some changes and I wanted to do something, I wanted to educate myself so that I can help others not go through the experience that I did. So I can help others learn how to advocate for themselves. So I went back to school. I got my master's degree. I'm in the dissertation phase of my doctoral journey for my PhD in behavioral health. I've invested in all of this over the last 10 years so that I can put myself in a position so that I can go back and take this knowledge that I gained through lived experience and give it back to my community and give it back to others so that I can help them not have to walk that path too. So I can help them learn that there are alternative approaches. There are things that can be done. We need to get on top of these things now. There are ways in which we can go about advocating for our children, for ourselves, and things in which we can do that, we can help our lives be better. The doctor said to me, he didn't understand how I had been functioning all of these years, Brother Randall. He said, my life had to be suffering. And you know what? It was. But I was a proud black man. But can we do what? We push through.
Right. Got to get through it. Tomorrow's
going to be another day.
There it is. I don't mean to be cutting you, but you know, but you remember we only got like an hour here, so I want to get as much information from you. Okay, you see what I'm saying? You gave us 2 points. You gave us disengagement. You gave us isolation. What is that third point? You know what I mean? Because I want to make sure not only that we talk about the problem, but I want to talk about the solution. You know, we got millions of listeners that listen to the show. So I want to make sure that we're capable of giving them solutions, because I can tell that this is passionate. And I know you probably can talk about this for the next 4 or 5 hours. You're right. You know what I mean? But I want to make
it's longer than an hour conversation, but I understand.
Exactly. All right. So what's that third?
The third thing is the lived experience. What's your child dealing with when they walk outside your door, Brother Randall, that you don't have control over? Are we preparing our children to navigate this world? Are we preparing our children to develop positive interactions and positive relationships? Are we preparing our children to deal with external forces that could have influence over their lives?
I would like you to answer that very first question that you just said right there.
To be honest, our children are struggling in these areas. I see it. I'm in the schools every day. It's getting younger. Young children that can't function outside of home, they go to school and everything's crisis. They don't want to go to school. They don't want to engage. They don't want to leave home. They don't want to go out into the world because it's so big and it's so stressful, and they don't feel that they can handle it. I'm seeing these things every day. I'm seeing anxiety levels through the roof with young 12, 13, 14, 15-year-old children.
Mm. Brother Carl, let me ask you this. Does mental health have a color? Does it have a culture?
No, it does not. Mental health does not discriminate on the basis of race, color, or creed.
Mm.
The only difference is how it's responded to.
So, now, is it responded to differently to those who don't have the means? Meaning, let's just keep it real here. Those who don't have money to get help, is it affecting that community different than those who have the means to get the best help there is available?
Without question. Socioeconomics plays a great deal in not just mental health, but health care in general.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in the South. I didn't grow up. We didn't go to the doctor. Grandma fixed it.
The only time
we went to the doctor was if she couldn't fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Or a vein was cut and you needed stitches. I can take off this suit blazer right now and show you wounds that have been healed by every kind of home remedy. And in some cases, Jamaican voodoo.
I'm sorry, brother.
That's real. Go ahead, brother. Broke in South Florida. It's real.
Wow.
Because we couldn't afford to go to Broward General Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So we had this. Home was where it got taken up first. My eye is hurting from an injury that happened during baseball my senior year in high school today. Because I didn't get taken to the doctor. Grandma gave me some ice, put some sort of ointment on it, and put that over my face. And next thing you know, I went back to school the next day with an eye patch on.
Wow.
Okay? That's because of the financial component. We could not afford to go get a $700 emergency bill. Okay? So the socioeconomic does play a role in how our community engages in these services. And it's also the it's also creating this albatross around our neck because it's holding us back from addressing a lot of things that are now very, very, very important. And we need to come up with ways to have these conversations and different ways of approaching getting these kinds of services so that we can get beyond demystifying the stigma we have in regards to our mental health.
So Brother Carl, let me ask you this then. Why is it in, you know, and it's just a very specific question then, why is it in the African American community, I find, you know, it's just my opinion here, that a lot of times this type of stuff is hidden. And like, you know, we don't believe that our people are going through any mental thing per se, unless they're out in the street, you know, running around naked or whatever. A lot of times we just look, oh, they're having a bad day or whatever. How come we tend to hide when we're having those loved ones that are actually going through something that actually needs some serious attention?
I can't express enough the historical context in which we approach not only our physical but our mental health. There's very much a historical context in our community in regards to these issues. Does it go back to slavery? Yes, it does. Does it go back to sharecropping? Yes, it does. Does it go back to systematic racism and disproportionality? Yes, it does. Does it go back to a stigma that we've just placed, that we've given ourselves in our own community because we don't want to be looked at as being labeled? We don't want to be called crazy. That's the worst thing you could ever say to a black person, that they're crazy. Right?
Yes,
you're going to automatically get a response to that. And it's not going to be one you're going to like.
You got that right.
So we don't want to be stigmatized. We have a distrust. We have a denial. You know, all of these things. We don't want to deal with the shame or guilt because we associate those things as being weak. So we don't want to be labeled any of that. So what do? We don't talk about it. And when we do talk about it, it's under the auspices of one or two things. We're either going to lose something, our freedom, our children. So it's usually a legal case involved, right? Children and Protective Services, you might have to seek mental health or family counseling in order to hold on to your children. Or, you know, you're having mental health issues and you have law enforcement in contact. Right? So are we addressing any of these concerns voluntarily? No. And when we do address these issues, are we dealing with anybody who looks like us?
Now,
very rare.
The notion has been, Brother Carl, is that a lot of times people go through mental health issues when the family is broken, like, okay, it's a single family mom or it's a single family dad, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But people go through mental health issues when they have both parents in the homes. Is there a distinct difference that you see in your studies that indicate that those with broken homes have more or less? When I say broken homes, in other words, like the mother and the father both are not in the home at the same time, or maybe went through a divorce or whatever it may be. Does your indicator show more or less mental health type cases, or does that not matter at all?
It all depends on what you define as broken. I have clients that live in $500,000 homes that have kids that are suicidal.
Yeah, when I say broken, meaning like the family so condition, define, not monetary-wise, but the family condition.
Yeah, the economic aspect doesn't define broken. And sometimes even the mom and dad at home. Isn't necessarily a common denominator. It doesn't really have, because you could have mom and dad at home and have dysfunction.
That's true. Absolutely.
So there's no one thing. It can be, you know, and in my particular case, I thought I was doing everything right at the time, for based on my education and what I knew.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I was doing everything to protect my child. So when it did happen, I was surprised. I was like, how is this happening? I thought we were doing everything right. You know, so there's no real indicator. Sure, in our community, do we have unique issues because of the breakdown in the African American family? Yes. The large numbers of mothers and fathers that have been incarcerated? Yes. Are we seeing fallout from that, of these young people now having to be raised by older grandparents and there being some instability in the family unit? Yes, there are issues of that. But guess what? Those issues aren't being addressed from a mental health standpoint, Brother Randall.
Mm-hmm.
Those issues are being addressed in educational centers in a more punitive way. You know, those issues are being addressed as behavioral issues, not mental health related issues.
Wow. Okay?
Whereas in other communities, they're getting access to mental health resources to address their concerns.
Why
different in our community?
Brother Carl? Why do a lot of times, when the first analysis is that maybe there's some mental health issues, that the first thing a lot of these professionals want to do is medicate? Like, is it because they're trained to treat instead of cure?
They're trained to focus on the diagnosis. If you focused on the diagnosis only, and that's all you're focused on, how are you going to have improvement?
Mm-hmm.
Think about that. If the only thing you're doing is focusing on anxiety, and every time a client comes to meet you, the only thing you're focused on is their anxiety, how have you determined whether that person has progressed or that they have developed the quality of life now? Think about that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. So if an individual is only focused on their diagnosis and their diagnosis alone, where's the progression in their life?
So I get where you're going. I'm not sure if you answered
right.
My question. What I was trying to get to is that there's a rush to judgment
to
medicate.
I'll get back to that.
All right.
Therapists are trained to focus on diagnosis. So that's where all of that goes. A diagnosis gives them an opportunity to prescribe medication.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, of course, we can be conspiracy theorists, and we can say, of course, you know, doing this just creates the market for people to be hooked on psychotropic drugs and all of those kinds of things, and we're feeding a market. And if they're healed, then all of a sudden you don't have a demand for a service anymore. Sure, we could go that route, you know. But at the exact same time, there's no one, like we said earlier, there's no one size fits all when working with mental health diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
The value from working in a mental health diagnosis isn't in the medication. It's in the relationship with the individual that's helping you deal with the issue.
Speaking of that, okay. I always wanted to ask this question, Brother Carl. Speaking of that, what does the medication so-called do for the patient? Does it so-called suppress these feelings that they're having? Like, I've never understood that, you know, like, okay, this person has a mental health problem, or they need to get this medication, et cetera, et cetera. What does it so-called do, or does it not do anything?
I like to use the word redirect.
Okay, explain, please.
It diverts it. It sets it aside. It moves. It switches the train to a different track for a while. But the issue's still there.
Absolutely.
Right? Okay? The issue's still there. So you've medicated it. You've given someone a lot of my teens call them happy pills now. They have happy pills. They believe that's the answer. If I get these happy pills, life is going to be good, right? I don't have to work anymore. I don't have to work to have a life anymore. This pill is going to make me happy.
So they haven't recognized fix. That
there is no such thing as a happy pill.
Mm-hmm.
Any type of progression in developing a quality of life for yourself is going to evolve, is going to involve work. You're going to have to do something to create change. Okay? Mm-hmm. There is no such thing as any medication that creates a change in your life. You have to be willing to do what's necessary to go from point A to point B or to accomplish your dream.
So for somebody that might be listening to this show around the world, you know, and they're ready because they see a problem in themselves, what can they do? Is there a place that they can call? Is there people that they can see? What is your suggestions for somebody? Because I don't believe in coincidence. I believe everything happens for a reason, and we're having this show for a reason, you know, on this major platform, you know, and I believe it's going to fall right into the hands and the ears of those who may need it. So what would be one of the first steps if someone has made a self-analysis that they may be having some mental health problems, and whom can they reach out to if that's possible?
You know, I would love to put a plug and say they can reach out to Increasing Life Chances for You. But, you know, you can reach out to anyone. Mm-hmm. That the mental health professional that has an approach that is going to be proactive, that's going to be about you being more than just a diagnosis. If you establish a relationship with anyone, with a therapist, whether it be a therapist or a psychologist, anyone, the first thing you should want to ask any of them is, how are they going to help you accomplish your goal? Your life. And that's the mantra of Increasing Life Chances for You. I'm not interested in diagnosis. I'm interested in helping the people that work with me accomplish what they want to accomplish for their lives so that they can live the best life they can possibly live and have a vision of what that is. I'm not interested in keeping someone stuck in neutral. I want to put them in drive. I want them moving forward. I want them working towards something. And it's going to come from them, not me. And I'm going to partner with them to hold them accountable to doing those things. So I don't want them just living with anxiety or depression. I want them being able to excel.
So, Brother Carl, if someone wanted to reach out to you and find out what you do and how you may be able to help them, how can they do that?
They can do that directly. They can give us a call, 612-999-4831. They can also check us out on Facebook, Increasing Life Chances for You. Check out the page. It's educational. It empowers. That's what ILC4Y is all about. We're all about empowerment. We're all about having our clients see the best of themselves and helping them work to get there and dealing with any mental illness or any mental health diagnosis and not just being labeled as such and living their life as such, but moving beyond labels.
Where are you based out of?
ILC4Y is based out of the Twin Cities in Minneapolis, Minnesota, but we also have a telehealth conferencing video platform that allows us to interact with people all over the world all over the country, at any place, anytime, anywhere. They can meet with me from the comfort of their bedroom. They can meet with me from the comfort of their office or on the train or on an airplane. Anywhere they have Wi-Fi access, they can reach ILC4Y, and we can connect, and we can talk, and we can discuss what's happening, and we can talk about ways in which I can help them move forward in accomplishing the goals that they want to accomplish in regards to addressing their mental health needs. So that platform is something I'm really, really excited about because, you know, a lot of times people feel comfortable at home. They don't like going into an office. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
They don't want to have to go into an office. They don't want to know. They don't want anybody to know what they're doing. They don't want anybody to know their business. But if they can hop on their laptop or their iPad and say, man, I could meet with Mr. Carl today and he can help me deal with some stuff. Man, I might be going through some grief. I might be stressed out. I might be going through some anxiety and I need to talk to someone. I got to get this out. I can just pull my laptop up and connect with Mr. Carl, and he's right there. And he can communicate with me and talk me through these issues in a HIPAA-compliant, secure platform that's private and confidential. I'm comfortable with that, you know? So I'm really, really excited about it because I have some clients that are I have six or seven clients that are outside of the state of Minnesota. A lot of them are adolescents because, you know, the kids love the video chat and they love the technology. So they love taking advantage of that opportunity. So it really lets me reach people everywhere. So I can reach your listeners in New York, New Jersey, Virginia, D.C., wherever they're at in the world.
Very, very powerful because we have listeners all over. We're globally. We have a lot of people in Germany, Australia. Oh, yeah. Around all the world. Yeah, exactly. So that's a beautiful thing. So I'm glad that happened. It's amazing how life, Brother Carl, puts us in situations and creates a path that we never thought we would be going on. Prior to this happening to you, you know, and going through this experience, did you have any idea this is where you'll be headed?
I had absolutely no idea. Brother Randall, absolutely no idea this would be my life's journey. And I do believe things happen for a reason. And I'm where I'm meant to be. And I'm using my gifts where I'm meant to use them. And, you know, When I think about it, I reflect on it. I'm like, it took my daughter having to go through so much pain and so much confusion to open up a window into myself to see that I could be a bit more than I was 10 years ago. And I'm grateful to her for that. I've seen what could happen when you have the right people in your life. I've seen what effective mental health consulting and therapy can do because I saw it happen with my own child. That young lady right now that went through so much is a college graduate, is getting ready to get married in 3 weeks, and is a pediatric nurse now helping others.
Wow.
So I've seen what could come from having that available. And did it take the first time? No. It took the fourth or fifth therapist before she found the person that she clicked with. And it made all the difference in the world. Having that relationship.
That goes to my next question, and my follow-up question is, when seeking out help, a therapist, a therapy, or however, you know, the type of individual you need to help you, how does one know who's the right fit for them, per se? You understand? Because you said it so eloquently right there. You know, it wasn't the first, second, or the third, or the fourth. You know, it was the fifth time that, you know, you came across somebody and that was the right fit. How does one figure that out?
You know, it, And that's why, to me, the most important aspect to working in mental health is establishing relationships.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and especially in the work that I do, I work with a lot of kids, and these kids are hip now. They can tell when somebody's coming at them from a real place, and they can tell when someone is just walking in the door with a file. You understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And they know exactly what their needs are. And they're waiting to see how you're going to interact with them. What are you going to ask them? Are you going to sit down to ask them the pertinent question? Are you going to ask them about themselves? Are you going to ask them about their hopes and dreams? Are you going to get to know them on a level beyond what you read in a file or a diagnosis? That's how you develop those kinds of relationships. That's how you find out who's going to be the right fit for you. You know, and the struggle with, that we face is that sometimes we only do it one time and then that's it.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't work for me, so I ain't going back. So then we don't address it at all anymore. But yet we still have these issues. Our children still have these issues. And that's the conversation I've been trying to have now with our community and get them to understand that you can't give up, because the first opportunity you gave to try to work on an issue, to work within this situation or to navigate this field, did not yield the results that you wanted at that time. And that's why it's so important that we have more African Americans serving African Americans in regards to mental health in this field. We are so underrepresented in it.
Wow, that's deep right there. So how does that happen? Like better yet, not how does that happen? Why are there not more of us in that type of career path? Why is that? Is it a money thing? Is it a no interest thing? Or what is it?
I don't think we're actually even recruited into this field.
Wow.
Brother Randall, to be honest with you. You know, I live in a state where we make up less than 3% of the population. I go to a culture of diversity training, and I'm the only African-American male in the room of about 200 or 300.
Wow.
Okay?
Wow.
Now, so, you know, there's that aspect, and it's just like the aspect of anything. It's, you know, in this field, you know, when I was growing up, no one said anything to me about becoming a mental health professional. You know, we don't get steered towards these types of institutions.
So you think
it's a whole other conversation.
So you think it's a lack of not knowing the availability of this type of career path.
And that's why we need to change it. We need to have conversations that, hey, we need to be steering more. We need to be steering more young African Americans toward working in the mental health field, because it is an area of severe need. We need more people of color working in the mental health field. Bottom line, and we need to start. And I have these conversations with some of the young people that I mentor. I got into this field by accident. I spent 26 years in the corporate arena chasing money. You know? And so I got into it indirectly because I went through it as a parent, and I saw an interest because my child was going through it. If my child was never going through it, I would have never seen myself doing what I do. Mm. And that right there is a travesty.
Absolutely.
You know?
So let me ask you this, Carl. Let me ask you this, Brother Carl. Had this not happened to you, you would have had zero interest in it? You wouldn't have been aware that this was your path had this not happened to you?
If this had not happened, I don't think it would have opened my eyes as wide as they should have been.
Were you aware of mental health issues prior to your daughter?
No.
Not at all.
Not at all.
Wow.
Not at all. Not at all. And that right there just boggles my mind when I think about it. It was never even on my radar to even be something, you know, to even think that it would be a path that I would be walking down, and or that I would have a PhD in behavioral health, it wasn't even, I couldn't even have said I even dreamed of something like that. You know, it happened in such a organic, roundabout way.
Mm-hmm.
And it took having a lived experience so that when I walk into a family's home and can sit down with them, they can tell they're talking to someone who's been there, who's been down that path that they're now facing. So we can have a different conversation. And they can talk to me in ways and be open with me in ways in which they couldn't communicate with someone who's never had boots on the ground, lived experience in this arena.
Absolutely.
Okay? So, you know, that needs to be, it needs to be something we need to be addressing, whether it's at the HBCU level, whether it's starting in high school, we need to start telling a lot of our young African American brothers and sisters out there that there is an opportunity for them to engage in their community in a field in need of quality young ideas and quality young energy and ways in which we can start changing and this mentality and this thinking towards how we address our mental health.
Mm, that's very, very powerful. We're coming down to the last few minutes. I could talk to you for a long time for this, but fortunately, you know, in radio, there has to be a beginning and an end.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I really, but you we definitely gonna have to bring you back to continue this conversation. So let me ask you this. What does the data say about the mental health issues on men versus women? Are is there a difference or is there not a difference?
In the African American community, the focus has been more on women.
And why is that? Because men don't want to say we have a mental problem, right? A mental health issue. We like to take care of it.
Because the women have been placed in situations within our family dynamic where they are mothers and daddies and brothers and sisters and doing everything. You know, the women in our community are the ones holding down our family dynamic. Too many of our men are incarcerated. Too many of our men are now using and abusing illicit narcotics. Too many of our families are now just being led by mama. And mama is stressed out to no end.
Mm. Yes, sir.
And she is not being supported. And she doesn't know where to go to get the necessary support that she needs. Mostly because she probably don't even have the time to.
Yeah, so busy taking
care
of everybody else.
Exactly. She takes care of everybody else but herself. And that right there needs to change.
Mm. Very, very powerful.
She can't take care of her children if she isn't right within herself, within her head and her own heart.
And one last question before I let you give your information again. Is there a book to follow this? Are we going to see a book, a movie, or something coming from you based on this experience?
You know, it's I've had people present those things to me as English things in which I should investigate. And I am interested in doing that. That's going to be a conversation I should hopefully have an opportunity to have with you, bro. We can put our heads together and we can put something together and put something in our community that can be a different voice.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Share a different story.
Absolutely. Yeah. And in the interest of full disclosure, I've known Mr. Carl for a long time. We went to high school together, so I just want to say out in the public, I'm very, very proud of what you're doing and how you've taken this task upon yourself to not only help your own situation, but go beyond and help as many people as you can, because that's what part of your legacy is all about. It's all about not how much you got yourself out of the situation, but how many other people did you help get through that situation. And we are all put in very unique positions with unique experiences so that we may share. And the fact that you made it through it, which means you was built for it. And if you're built for it, it means you were supposed to share. And I appreciate you doing that right here.
And let me make one further point, Brother Randall, before I let you go.
Yes, sir.
You know, and when I was starting my master's thesis work and writing what led to me creating Increasing Life Chances for You, I was listening to It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back, my public duty consistent. It was really what was motivating me to write this. And Chuck D said years ago that one of the reasons we're struggling in our African-American community is because we don't all know the same thing. So we're doing everything we're doing out here in this world blind. Mm-hmm. And you and I both came up in the same place. We're products of our environment. We're products of people that invested in us and gave us the encouragement to go out and move forward and gave me the empower me to believe that I can go off and get educated. So if I was to go off to college and get this education and get these credentials, it was with the understanding that I was going to do something with it. Mm-hmm. And I was going to be able at some point in time to be able to bring it back and pay it forward in my community in some way, right? Absolutely. So that I could share this knowledge, so I could share this experience with others who could possibly pick up something from it and be empowered and be inspired in their own way to say, hey, that brother came from the exact same place that I did. You, Benny, you motivate me every day. I love seeing what you're doing. I follow you. I love seeing you win. It inspires me to want to say, hey, what am I waiting for? Let me do something. Let me, if I'm talking about it, I want to do it too. I need to be the one doing it. We can't depend on others to come in and provide the resources that we need in our communities. We need to be doing that for ourselves.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Because that's the only way it gets done.
That's the only way it gets done. And, you know, and that's the motto moving forward.
I'm humbled by that. I appreciate that, brother. But yeah, I just want to make it formal. I'm very proud of you. I'm proud of what you've accomplished. And you know, because I don't think we say that about each other often, you know, without something behind it. But this comes from a pure place. And think we need to have more, you know, when I built this platform, I wanted it to be able to have the conversations that I thought we wasn't not having. And honestly, this is one of those conversations that I think doesn't get enough attention because it's not as extravagant. It's not as flashy. You know, it doesn't have a lot of flashing lights and everything, but it's very, very important. And I appreciate you being one of those soldiers out there that's actually taking it upon yourself to make a change in other people's life, my friend.
We're on the front lines right now, brother. And, you know, we're at a crossroads in our community right now. And we're being attacked on multiple fronts. And now's not the time for us to remain silent on issues that are impacting our community. And we have to be brave enough to be able to put it out there.
Absolutely.
And to be able to have true conversations. So that's, you know, I'm thankful for the opportunity to speak with you tonight and to, you know, to share my opinions and what my truths have been. And if someone out there can take something from it or wants to talk about these issues more, I'm very, very, very open to doing that with them.
So speaking of that, how can those who want to reach out to you, they heard this and they may have some questions or maybe want to take you up on some of those services you offer, how can they reach out to you, my friend, once again?
Sure, they can reach out. They can reach out to us directly at 612-999-4831. You can send an email, ILC4Y, and that's the number 4Y, at outlook.com. Also, check us out on Facebook. Go to the Increasing Life Chances for You page. And and send us a comment. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to engage and have conversation. And if we can be of service in any way, we would be happy to work with you.
Absolutely. And once again, I appreciate you being here on the Benny Randall Show, where we believe it's your business to know.
Thank you, my brother.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to leave you with this right here. Mental health is an increasingly problem that's increasing on a daily basis, and especially in the African American communities, but all communities. And I want you to know this. Unless you do something about it, you can't get help. And we wanted you to know that there is help out there. You can reach out to Mr. Carl or whomever that you feel comfortable with. Do your research. You can Google them. You can find out what they're doing. You can see how focused they are doing it, and you make that help. But whatever you do, get some help. Whatever the case may be, we're going to revisit this conversation at a later time. You know, it is my humble hope that this message, this conversation helps someone. If you're on that edge, get up and call somebody, talk to somebody, reach out to people like Mr. Carl Jung, at the places he gave. Just rewind this and get those that information. All right. I am Benny Randall Jr., aka the Motivator. And I hope and I'm thankful that you allow me into your hearts and your homes. Until next time, you can reach me at BennyRandall.com or BennyOnDemand.com. Like I always say, it's not a game, it's a lifestyle. I love you, and you can't do a damn thing about it. Good night.
Don't stop. Keep it locked. Keep it we locked. Global, baby. BashaniRadio.com. You better ask somebody. Kaboom.
Major key alert. Don't ever play yourself. Life is like school. You will be tested. So pass it.
Learn the real major keys to getting to college at GetSchooled.com.
Stay focused. Now that's a major key alert.
Brought to you by Get Schooled and the Ad Council.
Yeah. It's not a game. It's a lifestyle. We global. BashaniRadio.com. New York City. Always talking about everything.
We're taking over the radio.